years ago, Will, but I've prayed all my life for a home of my own, and for this. She patted the sounding board of the piano. Defensive, she added, it was going to be me or somebody else. He said so. Folks will talk, I know, but you ask why did I marry him? Yes, for a house. Can you imagine what this means to me, Will Tweedy? All my life I've lived in rented upstairs rooms with ugly rented furniture. Cousin Lottie used to say we were so poor that we didn't have a pot to throw out the window, and we didn't. We had to move every time the rent was overdue. But when you went to work, milliners make room money, Will, not house money. Yes, I suppose so. But after it seemed to be God's will that I never marry, I gave up hope of ever having a home. Does it sound so awful, Will, to marry for worldly goods? No, it don't to me. Maybe to some folks. The Lord answers prayers in strange ways. I nodded to show I understood. Then, stretching, I tried to figure some way to lighten up the conversation. Too bad you didn't hold out a little longer. Grandpa and God might have given you a riding horse, too. She laughed. If I tried to get everything I ever wanted, Will, I'd have asked for a diamond necklace and a motor car and... Yes'm, but he might have married that other lady. Miss Love smiled, but it was a weak smile. The steam had gone clean out of her. Will, do you think they'll let me in, your family? I didn't know how to say what she wouldn't want to hear, so I said, there's just one thing I can't figure, ma'am. Why didn't you get married long time ago? A lady pretty as you, I bet the Lord didn't have no trouble giving you chances. For instance, why didn't you marry Mr. Sun Black? He's got a nice house. Miss Love stood up, so I did too. She said, I knew God didn't want me to marry a man like him. He talks tough, but inside he's just a little bitty boy, scared of his mama. And anyhow, it's her house. She was silent a minute, then laughed and made a joke. Reading King Arthur is what made me an old maid, Will. I kept holding out for a hero, a knight in shining armor. I really thought some rich, exciting man would come riding up on a white horse and rescue me from being poor and unhappy. After I fell in love with the man in Texas, well, he was rich and had a white horse, but he was no knight, and neither is Sun Black. He couldn't qualify as the hero in a cheap novel. Glad to be on a new subject, I said. I've been reading a novel, Miss Love, one called Damaged Goods. I got it hid in the barn. Papa would have a fit, but it's got a good moral lesson. I think books like that are good for a boy if he has the right mind. You want to borrow it when I get through? She didn't laugh at me. Well, maybe. She sighed. Do you know what I'm talking about, Will? Yes'm, maybe. I'm saying that after I missed the Love Boat, I wasn't going to settle for a raft, meaning somebody like Sun Black. But I'm glad to settle for a man I can respect and a family I'm proud to be part of. I think Mr. Blakesley is probably the only completely honest man I've ever known. He drinks a little, but... She hesitated. Not like my father. Whiskey isn't important to Mr. Blakesley. No'm, I think Grandpa mostly takes that one drink to prove he's got a right to. And maybe, I thought, he married you to prove the same thing. Miss Love looked at her hands. My nails are a sight from all that scouring, she said, taking a long file off the mantelpiece and smoothing a frayed thumbnail. Then, meeting my eyes, she sighed and said, Now, Will, have I answered your question? Yes'm, thank you, ma'am, I understand. I was so flattered the way she'd poured out her heart. Miss Love, why don't you go lay down now? You look wore out. Never say lay, Will. She was teasing. I will not lay, but I think I may lie for a while. I really am tired. Walking slowly to the hall, where there was a little breeze, she stretched out on the daybed and went to filing her nails. I went to her bedroom and started filling up the boxes. I was pulling moldy old-timey dresses and frayed coats and hats of Granny's out of the wardrobe when I chanced to look out the front window and saw a well-dressed stranger pass by on the dirt sidewalk. Hung over his right arm was a fancy saddle with silver trim that gleamed so bright in the sun it just about put my eyes out. That saddle wasn't like anything you'd ever think to see in Cold Sassy then or now. neither was the man. And suddenly he paused and looked towards Grandpa's house. Chapter 21. I had seen pictures of cowboys in books and magazines, and this fellow didn't exactly look like a cowboy. I mean, he wasn't dirty, didn't have on spurs or cowhide chaps or a red bandana around his neck, and didn't carry a lasso. He looked like he just had a bath and a shave, and he was wearing an expensive black suit. But he was a cowboy, all right. I knew by the high-heeled, tooled leather boots, the big white felt hat, and the pistol in a holster on his hip. When a cold, sassy man carries a pistol, he straps it across his chest under his shirt, and you don't see it. The main thing, though, was that tooled leather western saddle he toted, which, like I said, was ornamented with silver. The stranger held it careless, as if it weighed no more than a rooster, though even to a horse it would have been heavy as lead. What I could hardly believe was the man himself. His legs were so long it seemed like they swung from his waist. His body was long, too, and his arms and hands, and even his craggy, sun-browned face. He must have been 6'3" at least, and walked with a different gait altogether from the men in Cold Sassy. After pausing and squinting hard in my direction, the stranger walked on. I rushed to the front door to get a better look. I watched as he stopped little Timmy Hopkins, who was rolling a hoop in the street. They talked a minute, Timmy pointed toward Grandpa's house, and the stranger, shifting the saddle to his other arm, came back. "Miss Love," I called softly, "come here quick." I pointed down the street as she came up beside me. "Lord, it's hot," she mumbled sleepily, rubbing the small of her back. "Will, what are you staring at?" "Look at that feller." Her gaze focused where my finger was pointing. "Oh, my God in heaven," she gasped. Both hands flew to her mouth. "Oh, Lord, what can I do?" She ran back a few steps into the hall, whirled around. Her face had gone so white the freckles stood out like tiny brown polka dots. "Don't let him in, Will." But even as she said it, she bent down to wipe the sweat off her face with her skirt, then tried to smooth her hair. "Oh, Lord, he mustn't see me like this. Will, say I'm not home." But the man was already up the steps, and before she could escape, had either heard or seen her, without so much as a knock or a by your leave, he stalked through the door, brushing past me, eased the saddle to the floor, and, seeing nothing but her, moved down the hall toward Miss Love. She stood there like she'd gone numb, her hands on her mouth. When he got to her, they just stood staring at one another. He took off the big hat, real slow, his eyes never leaving hers, dropped it on the daybed and took her hands and kissed them. Then he put his arms around her and kissed her right on the mouth. Kissed her like he was starved and she was something to eat. I never in my life dreamed of a kiss being like that. It sure wasn't that time I kissed Mary Riley St. John behind the door at Orlie McGibney's party, and it sure wasn't like that when Papa kissed Mama goodbye after breakfast. Mama was usually still eating, so he'd bend down and wait while she wiped her mouth, then smack her one, and that's all there was to it. Well, this man kissing Miss Love, he didn't just kiss her. He kept on kissing her. A string of kisses a mile long melted together as his lips brushed her ears, her neck, her arms, her hair, and then got back to her mouth again. And Miss Love was kissing him back, no doubt about it. I didn't know what to do. I stood on one foot, then the other, and if I'd had a third foot, I'd have shifted to it. For sure, I was in the way, and I ought to slip on out. But I was pinned to the side. Oh, gosh, what if Grandpa walked in? Like it was me that was guilty, I glanced through the open door, half expecting to see him. Who I saw instead was Miss Effie Bell Tate from next door, hurrying up the walk with a frosted coconut cake. I first thought she was bringing it to Miss Love as a welcome to the bride present. But in her hurry to get over here, Miss Effie Bell had forgot to change out of her bedroom shoes, so I knew right off she hadn't planned a social call. What happened, I guessed, was that Miss Effie Bell saw the tall stranger walk into Grandpa's house with the saddle, and as an excuse to get a good look at him, had grabbed up the cake she just frosted. Bursting out onto the veranda, I met her at the top step. "Sure is a hot day, ain't it, Miss Effie Bell?" I talked loud as I could. She wasn't deaf or anything like her brother, but I was hoping if Miss Love had any ears left, she would hear me and run sit down prim and proper in the parlor. If the stranger sat clear over on the other side of the room, they could make like they'd just been talking. As Miss Effie Bell marched toward the doorway, I kind of stepped in front of her and yelled, "D- Did you see that tall fellow that's come calling Miss Effie Bell? Ain't he a buster? I think he's her lawyer or somebody. I had my voice aimed halfway at the coconut cake and halfway into the hall. Miss Love would have more time to set a spell if you'd come back later, Miss Effie Bell. Oh, shut up, Will, she said. But she stopped at the door, chewed on her bottom lip like she was thinking, and then seemed to change her mind about barging in. The way the big pink wart on her upper lip quivered, I couldn't tell if she had seen them kissing or just lost her nerve. At any rate, she turned on her heel, nearly losing a bedroom slipper, and without a word and without so much as handing me the coconut cake, though I reached for it, she marched down the steps and took her cake back home. I sure hated that, and her forgetting to give it to me made me think for sure she'd seen the kissing. About time I got back in the house, Miss Loeb came to herself and opened her eyes, and the fireworks started. The stranger just laughed when she tried to push him away. Didn't back off till she scratched his neck with claw fingers.
You ain't changed a bit, love.
He rubbed his neck, but he was still laughing.
You ain't either, you devil, she screamed, bursting into tears.
That was the first time I ever heard her say ain't.
Why did you come here? Get out of my house.
Your house?
He looked around the front hall, took in all the signs of cleaning, ambled over and peered into the parlor, and put on an exaggerated mock expression of being impressed.
Millinery sure must pay good in Georgia.
He strolled towards her. She backed back.
You put your hands on me again, Clayton McAllister, I'll gouge your eyes out. I'll kill you.
She grabbed the long nail file off the daybed. He laughed again, but not with his whole face, I noticed.
That's what I like about you, Tiger, he drawled. You got spirit. But if you kill me, honey, you'll be killing the man that's going to take you out of this hick town. Love, I come to get you.
She stared at him, dumbfounded.
Get me? What are you talking about?
If you'd open my letters instead of sending them back, you wouldn't be so surprised. Lord knows I've written you enough.
Whatever Miss Love felt when he was kissing her sure had evaporated. The gold pin was undone and she hadn't even noticed, though I expect he had, standing where he could look right down that low-cut pink dress. I knew I ought to leave.
Miss Love, I said, I got to get on home and milk the cow.
She exploded like a fireworks rocket.
Don't you dare, Will Tweedy. You leave me alone here with him and nobody in this town will ever speak to me again.
Go long home, boy, said Clayton McAllister, as if he'd known I was there all the time. It won't matter if nobody here speaks to her again, 'cause she won't be living here no more.
Miss Love swung around, her hands clenched, face red, those gray-blue eyes hard as steel, and the fanciest gosh-darn words coming out of that big mouth you ever heard. She didn't yell. She spat words. I can't remember all she said, but Mr. McAllister got the message that she had made the mistake of loving him once, and she sure would never make that mistake again. And why did he think she would run off to Texas with him, for heaven's sake? He wasn't laughing now.
You don't know what you're talking about.
He was mad.
I'm asking you to marry me, not run off with me.
You asked me once before, if I remember correctly.
She blazed away like a six-shooter, hitting him with words.
And off I went to Baltimore, all dreamy-eyed, to sew my trousseau. Cousin Lottie and I were finishing up the wedding dress when your letter came. It just about killed me, Clayton McAllister. Gosh, that must have been how she found out he'd eloped with her best friend.
Miss Love sat down on the daybed.
Oh, how I've hated you.
I deserve it, love.
He looked miserable.
But I've come to tell you. I'll make it up to you if you'll let me.
She stood up and said,
Well, that's settled. So goodbye.
He took a long breath and pointed at the saddle.
I had that made for you, remember? It's been in the tack room all this time. Nobody's used it. I want you to have it.
I don't want it. I don't want anything of yours, especially not a saddle that was an engagement present, for heaven's sake. Take it back to Texas.
Love, I've brung it back to be your engagement present again. Can't you understand?
Gosh, that must mean Miss Love's best friend had died. Her lips were trembling like she might cry. She sank down on the daybed again.
Lord, Clayton, you don't have a grain of sense. You write me I'm not good enough for you, and now 2 years later you...
I didn't say that, damn it.
Don't you curse at me. Whatever it was you said, that's what you meant.
She didn't look about to cry now. She looked mad.
How a philanderer like you could sit in judgment on me, I'll never understand.
I felt like you were, like you'd been pretended to be something you weren't. That's why I got so mad at you. How pride could have made me hurt an angel like you.
He moved towards her. There was the same look on his face as on Grandpa's when Granny's hand went limp in his. But there was hope, too.
Love, he whispered. You're the only woman I could ever marry. You know that.
Gosh, then he'd never eloped with Miss Love's best friend. Loma must have made that up.
There's been other women in my life, he admitted. But nobody I wanted to marry but you.
Huh, what you mean is that the pickings are slim in Texas. You've given up on finding somebody decent out there. Well, if the only white women you know are married ladies or white trash or both, that's your worry, not mine. Get you a Mexican wife, get you a squaw, or spend the winter in town again. Remember my friend Edna May? She wrote me they've sent in another milliner from Baltimore.
But I want you, love, only you. And you still care for me, I can tell. Please, love, forgive me.
I do think that for a moment Miss Love yearned towards him. Then all of a sudden she laughed out loud.
Clayton McAllister, what's there to forgive? Well, you've heard all this. Do you see anything to forgive?
All this time I was standing in the darkest out-of-the-way corner I could find. I thought they'd both forgot I was there.
I don't know 'em, I mumbled.
Well, there's not. You did me a favor, Clayt. If you had even pretended to be a forgiving Christian gentleman, I'd now be the lonely wife of a rich, stuck-up philanderer. Meaning you, God help me. Because that's all you were when we met, and that's all you were when you asked me for the ring back, and that's all you are now. Edna May wrote me all about you and that married woman you've been...
He was real mad.
Whatever Edna May said, it ain't true.
But I believe her. You wanted to marry me in the first place, Clayt, because I wouldn't... I was just a challenge. You always did want anything you couldn't get. Then when I told you what you didn't want to hear, you...
She stopped, biting her lip.
Well, so here you are again, all the way from Texas. I guess your pride's hurt because I wouldn't read your letters, much less answer them. It's a helpless feeling to get letters back unopened, isn't it, Clayton?
I know.
In case you don't remember, I wrote you after you asked me to send back the ring. I poured out my heart in that letter. When it came back in the mail, I opened it and read it. Lord, I was glad you never knew how I had groveled at your feet.
Love, I'm groveling at yours now. Please listen to me.
Ignoring him, she said brightly,
I just had another thought. Maybe that married lady friend is what has brought you back to me. Is she after your money, Clayt? Is she talking about divorcing her husband? She's got you scared, hasn't she? You'd rather marry somebody like me than a divorced person, and if you can take me to Texas, she'll be off your back. Is that it?
Mr. McAllister was furious.
Love, will you shut up? I've come back for just one reason. I love you.
He reached to touch her arm. She jerked away. Her hands were shaken. She hid them in her skirt.
I've changed, love. God knows it.
Well, I don't. So you just pick up that saddle and ride it out of here. I don't want it. It's tainted.
You're coming with me, Love Simpson. You still love me and you know it.
It looked like he was fixing to grab her for another 10-minute kiss. Gosh, I didn't think I could watch that again.
And had she forgot all about Grandpa? Why didn't she just tell Mr. Cowboy she was already married?
Right then she came out with it. Almost laughing as she looked up at him, she said sweet and easy,
If you were the last man on earth, Mr. Clayton McAllister, I wouldn't go a mile with you, even if I was free to.
What do you mean?
She held the back of her left hand up to his face and wiggled the fourth finger. Then I guess she remembered her wedding band was still on top of the piano. She tapped the finger.
I've got a wedding ring goes on this.
A sound on the porch made her look toward the front door.
And I do believe,
she said, cool and calm as you please, though I bet her knees were shaken.
I do believe here comes my husband now.
Of course, somebody must have gone to the store and told Grandpa there was a tall stranger with a silver-trimmed saddle up at his house. And something about the way it was said had made him hot-foot at home, else why would he leave the store on a busy Saturday? When I saw him walk in with that clean-shaved face, close-cut dark hair, and thin mustache, my first thought was to wonder if it was really Grandpa. My second thought was to be proud of him, especially for Miss Love's sake. My third thought was that Miss Effie Bell, unless she took Grandpa for another stranger calling on Miss Love, must have run out and told him about the kissing. Gosh, in that case he might bust Mr. McAllister's head wide open.
Chapter 22.
I didn't know then whether Miss Effie Bell had got to Grandpa or not, but I found out later that white-haired old Mr. Boop had. Papa told us that night how Mr. Boop ran over from the hotel to say a fellow wearing a Stetson hat and cowboy boots had come in on the train from Lula.
"Where's Rucker at?"
Mr. Boop asked, picking up a can of pipe tobacco and handing Grandpa the money.
"You talking to him, Amos?"
Grandpa grinned and ran his hand over his smooth-shaved face. Papa and them laughed out loud as Mr. Boop stared.
"It's me, all right, Amos. See?"
Grandpa held up that left arm and dangled the knotted sleeve in his face.
"Well, I be dog. Ain't you a sight? I was just a-wondering how Rucker could have hired a new man, and I ain't heard about it."
"Well, I want to tell you about this here stranger, Rucker. He come in the hotel toting a fine brown and white cowhide grip and the fanciest dang saddle you ever seen. Silver doohickeys all over it. The fella said he needed to shave and get a bath, but might not be staying for the night."
"What's his business here?" Grandpa asked, real interested.
"Didn't state his business, but pretty soon he came back to the hotel desk. He was cleaned up, slicked down, and wearing a nice black suit, and still carrying that dadgum saddle. You know what he asked, Rucker? He asked where did Miss Love Simpson board at, or would she be at work?"
After letting that soak in on Grandpa, Mr. Boop said, "I pointed the way to your house, Rucker, but I didn't bother telling him she got married. Didn't seem to me it was any of his business. But I thought you ought to know that a tooled leather saddle ornamented with Mexican silver is heading up North Main towards your house."
"Is that so?" said Grandpa. According to Papa, he didn't even look up.
"This man's so good-looking, Rucker, I bet he has to use tar soap to keep the ladies from lassoing him."
"Is that so?" said Grandpa.
"You going down there, Rucker?"
"I ain't got time right now. I reckon Miss Love knows how to make a stranger welcome."
Mr. Boop, having felt Grandpa's right fist on his jaw one time, he was probably hoping a good fight would come out of the situation. But I wasn't hoping it when Grandpa sauntered through the front door of his house. I couldn't think of anything worse for an old man than getting beat up by his wife's former fiance. Maybe Grandpa wasn't in a fighting mood that day, or maybe he took one look at Mr. McAllister and figured discretion was the better part of valor, as the saying goes. He not only didn't pitch Mr. McAllister out, he shook hands nice as you please, saying, "Where are you from, and why don't we go sit down in the parlor?"
"Miss Love, see if and they's some of Miss Mattie Lou's scuppin' on nectar in the pantry here,"
said Grandpa, taking the rocking chair and motioning Mr. McAllister to Granny's gentleman's chair.
"Fix us a drink with that, Miss Love."
After she went to the kitchen, Grandpa winked at Mr. McAllister and said,
"Sorry, I ain't got no locust beer to offer you. My son-in-law, he makes it by the barrelful. Ever had locust beer?"
"Never cared for it much," said Mr. McAllister. "The other'll be fine, Mr. What's your name, sir?"
"Blakesley, E.R. Blakesley."
"Clayton McAllister, sir."
They stood up and shook hands again like they'd just met and went on talking. Miss Love was gone a good while. When she finally brought in a tray with the pale gold drinks, she had on lots of perfume and a clean yellow dress with a high neck, and her hair was fixed nice. She looked real fresh and pretty. Grandpa was just the friendliest host you ever saw. He asked how long was the train trip from Texas, spoke of the drought, and discussed the difference between Texas barbecue and the Georgia kind. Then they got to talking hard times, but I couldn't listen for wondering if Miss Love was thinking about Mr. McAllister kissing her. If she was, she didn't let on. But that's what I was thinking about. If God had sent this man all the way from Texas to barge in and tempt her, she sure had been found wanting. From there I got to thinking about predestination. The Southern Presbyterians believe that what is to be and you can't do a thing about it. I mean, they think that from the day you're born, God knows everything that's going to happen to you. Preordains it, the preacher keeps saying. It has never made any sense to me to try so hard or even to pray for something if God is either going to make it happen despite all your prayers and all you do or don't do,
or else make it not happen despite everything. For instance, suppose Mr. McAllister hadn't got mad and called off the wedding, and Miss Love had married him despite his reputation for philandering. Would that mean God had preordained them to marry no matter what? Or would it just mean Miss Love wanted to marry him no matter what? I sure wished I could ask Papa how to fit predestination into this puzzle.
Well, suppose the Lord wanted Miss Love to marry Mr. McAllister, hoping she could save him from his sin and ways, and suppose she had married him, but then he just kept right on chasing women. Could she ever again have counted on God to steer her right? It's a pity God ever let Miss Love out of Baltimore. If she'd never met up with Mr. McAllister, she wouldn't have had to get that nasty letter from him so God could show her he didn't approve of the match, and Granny wouldn't have had to die so God would find Miss Love a house. When I tried to make sense out of all that, it seemed like the Bible was right. The Lord does work in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. Grandpa had gone to talking politics. He was telling Mr. McAllister about the winter morning when Brother Beeli Jones's wife fired up her stove and shut the oven door, not knowing her cat was asleep in there. By the time Miss Jones opened the oven and found Essie, the dang cat was cooked. Later, Miss Jones come down to the store just a-crying. Said, "Poor Essie, she must have slept right through, else why wouldn't I have heard her holler?" Sometimes I think us folks in the South are just like poor Essie. We sleeping right through them unfair freight rates, for instance, when we ought to be hollering all the way to Washington. Mr. McAllister laughed. Miss Love laughed too, but uneasy, like at the circus when the man puts his head in the tiger's mouth and you giggle when what you want to do is cover your eyes. The husband and the fiance really liked each other, I could tell. Grandpa even asked Mr. McAllister to take potluck and stay to supper, practically insisted. "We don't get folks from Texas here every day," he said in his best hospitality voice. Knowing what I knew and not knowing what, if anything, Grandpa knew, all this funnin' and politeness gave me the creeps. Lord knows what it was doing to Miss Love, who'd hardly said a word since Grandpa walked in. But the invitation brought the Texan back to the situation at hand. "Thank you, sir, but I gotta catch the train to Atlanta. I better get on back to the hotel and pick up my grip." He stood up, and Grandpa and Miss Love stood up, and I did, and there was an awkward minute till Grandpa said, "Well, I wish you'd stay on, sir. We could put you up for the night." That must have given Miss Love a start. Picking up the big white hat off the daybed, she handed it to Mr. McAllister and said, nervous as a witch, "He was just leaving when you came in, Mr. Blakesley. He's got business in Atlanta." The long, tall man flipped his hand in the general direction of the saddle laying on the floor. He said, kind of casual, "This here belongs to your wife, Mr. Blakesley. I come by to bring it to her, being as I was in the vicinity, so to speak."
"You shouldn't have gone to all that trouble, Mr. McAllister," said Miss Love, real formal. "I don't have a horse. You take it on back to Texas."
"No," he said. "If you don't want it, Miss Love, I mean Miss Blakesley, why, sell it. And it was no trouble, you being such a friend of the family while you were out in Texas." The saddle was a good excuse to drop by, and, he actually winked at her. "If you and Mr. Blakesley ever get out my way, y'all be sure and look me up. I'd like to feed Mr. Blakesley some Texas barbecue."
Ignoring the invite, Miss Love said, "It's been nice to see you again, Mr. McAllister." She looked up at him like he was no more to her now than some 10-year-old boy come in for penny candy at the store. Then she placed her trembling hand on Grandpa's good arm, smiling up at him like he was made out of money and honey both. Boy, howdy, you wouldn't guess that 50 minutes ago she had been kissing this other man. Grandpa walked the Texan out to the street, clapped him on the shoulder good-natured-like, and pointed directions to town. It wasn't till my grandfather came back in the house that he really looked at the saddle. Going over to where it lay on the floor, he hooked it up with the toe of one high-top shoe to see it better.
"Miss Love, I think—"
"Mr. Blakesley, I was once engaged to marry Mr. McAllister. He had that saddle made for me. It was his engagement present."
She was talking fast, like if she slowed down, she might lose her nerve.
She told Grandpa in a small, pinched voice that what Mr. McAllister really came for was to get her to marry him. Then Miss Love flung herself down on the daybed and went to crying. "I hate him, I hate him, I hate him!"
She beat her fist on the thin mattress in time to the "I hate him's."
"She sure told him off, Grandpa," said I, trying to be helpful. "You should have heard her."
Grandpa didn't answer, just stood there looking down at the fancy saddle.
I was a fool, Mr. Blakesley.
Her words were muffled sobs. Now it's coming, I thought. She's going to tell Grandpa about the kissing. Instead, she said,
How I ever thought I wanted to marry him, I don't know. I was such a fool, and old enough to know better.
Grandpa sighed and sat down by her on the daybed. Best fool knows he's a fool, Miss Love. I don't know a soul who couldn't see a fool just by looking in the glass. I've been one myself once or twice, so hush up now. Crying ain't gonna do no good.
Grandpa just couldn't hardly stand to watch a woman cry. Well, plainly Miss Love wasn't a big enough fool to mention getting kissed, but thinking to kind of warn her in case she didn't know that somebody besides me may have seen the peep show, I butted into the silence.
I thought y'all were going to have a coconut cake for supper, Grandpa. Miss Effie Bell came over with one just now.
Miss Love shot to a sitting position, her hands covering her mouth and the whites of her eyes showing.
Miss Effie Bell? She came over here?
Yes'm, I reckon she wanted to get a good look at Mr. McAllister. But I went out on the porch and told her y'all were talking business and maybe it'd be best if she came calling tomorrow.
Oh, Lord, Miss Love moaned.
She forgot to hand me the cake. Miss Love wasn't interested in the cake.
Did she see Mr. McAllister?
I could tell she was really worried and dying to find out what else I knew. Importance swelled me up inside. At that point, Grandpa held up his right hand like a policeman.
Y'all shut up. Let me think a minute, here.
Well, Miss Love and I shut up, and Grandpa commenced pacing the floor. I couldn't take my eyes off of him. From the neck down, he was the same old Grandpa Blakesley. From the neck up, he was a distinguished, smooth-faced stranger who looked kind of familiar. After a while, he slowed down to bite off a plug of tobacco and moved it into his cheek. Then he paced some more. Finally, he stopped in front of the saddle, shoving it with his foot. Just to look at Grandpa, most people wouldn't know he was upset. But I could tell. All the time he was pacing, his shoulders kept twitching forward, one or the other or both, a sure sign. And every minute or two, he stopped to scratch his head hard and fast. When he finally spoke, what he said was, Miss Love, you want to marry Mr. McAllister?
Why would he ask a thing like that when she was already married and also had just finished saying how much she hated the man?
She was as surprised as I was, too surprised even to answer. Just sat on the daybed staring at Grandpa with wide-open eyes and a wide-open mouth.
'Cause if'n you do, or if'n you have a mind to after you get over being so mad at him, why, we could get this and annulled. Folks in Cold Sassy will have a good time talking, but if you go on off to Texas, why, you won't have to put up with nothing on account of it. So, you want to marry him or don't you?
Chapter 23 Miss Love rose to her feet, looking just about as stunned as old Charlie Smith did after he sold the family home place and heard the new owner had found a bag of gold coins behind a square of crumbling plaster in the dining room. Walking slowly toward the back door, she stood looking out for a long time, twisting her hands and saying nothing. Finally, she turned and spoke, sounding like a wrung-out dish rag.
Mr. Blakesley, she said, her eyes cast down, I don't want an annulment. If I weren't married to you, I still wouldn't marry him.
He went over close, and she looked him square in the face.
I reckon you done answered my question, he said.
But then Miss Love's hands were on her mouth again.
Oh, Lord, maybe you were trying to say, maybe what you mean is that you, sir, want an annulment. I don't blame you. I've embarrassed you before the whole town.
Big new tears streaked down her cheeks.
You want me to leave, don't you, Mr. Blakesley?
God almighty, why would I want that?
I could see him thinking he would have to hire him a housekeeper if she left.
If and it was in my mind to ask you to leave, that's what I would have said, Miss Love. So in which case the subject is closed. Now, what about that there saddle?
I don't want it.
Trying to stop crying, she snuffled and blew her nose.
Well now, said Grandpa.
Sitting down, he lifted the saddle onto his knee and looked close at the silver and the tooling.
It sure is a handsome thing.
I don't care.
She glanced at Granny's clock on the mantelpiece.
Will, I want you to run up to the hotel with it. If he's not there, take it to the depot.
Now let's think about this a minute, Miss Love, said Grandpa, motioning me to wait.
I don't want it.
That ain't the point. A man with a bad conscience and stubborn enough to lug something this heavy all the way from Texas, he ain't gonna lug it back home. You send it up to the hotel, why, he'll have to bring it back down here. Miss Effie Bell's neck will break off trying to keep up with all the back and forths. Besides, Mr. McAllister might miss his train.
He grinned. You keep it. Then that will be the end of that, and you won't need no more truck with him.
Miss Love was speechless. Thinking to get in a lick for her, I said, Gosh, Grandpa, what good is a saddle without a horse?
Oh, I can just see Miss Love sitting up on that fancy gee-gaw on your old mule. Oh, yeah, old Jack would pure die from embarrassment, said Grandpa, laughing for the first time since Mr. McAllister left. But I can't afford no horse. Miss Love, I reckon you'll just have to hang up that saddle for a ornament.
She didn't answer, just kept snuffling.
Grandpa was pacing around nervous, scratching his head hard and fast again.
Shut up, yeah, he finally said to Miss Love. One thing I can't stand is a crying woman.
That made her cry worse.
All of a sudden, Grandpa slapped his leg, excited.
Y'all, I just recollected a letter I got from Cousin Jake not long before Miss Mattie Lou died. You know Cousin Jake, son.
I ain't sure, Grandpa.
Well, maybe you too young to remember the last time he come to Cold Sassy.
He turned to Miss Love.
Jake lives just this side of Cornelia, raises thoroughbred racehorses.
She looked up from her crying, curious to know what Grandpa was driving at.
Jake's near about gone broke on them racehorses. Not from betting. He's got too much sense to bet. He just can't find much of a market for 'em right now. Anyhow, he offered to give me a 3-year-old if and I'd come get him. Said the horse had been broke to a halter, and that's all, but if I had a mind to fool with it, I could have her for nothing. Said it would save him feeding that big mouth another winter. At the time, the last thing I wanted was a dang racehorse, but, Miss Love, you want her?
I never thought to want a racehorse, Mr. Blakesley, but...
Think you could train him?
Didn't you say it was a her?
I don't recollect. All the same difference. A gelding, maybe. Point is, could you train it to that there saddle? I can't pay nobody to train it, but Will Tweedy here could help you. So you want a free horse, or don't you? If an old Jake ain't got shed of it already.
Yes, yes, I do want it. Oh, I do.
Miss Love was up and practically hopping, she was so excited.
Then what say we let Will Tweedy go get him? Grandpa looked at me and winked. Son, what's today, Saturday?
Yes, sir.
Well, early Monday morning, I want you to hitch old Jack to my buggy and go get that horse. Maybe you could carry the Predmore boy along for company.
It was my turn to be hopping now. You'd have thought I'd been in jail for 3 weeks instead of in mourning. Boy, howdy. Then I had another idea, which I didn't waste time presenting.
How about if I borrow Grandpa Tweedy's covered wagon, sir, and us boys go camping in the mountains? We could go by Cousin Jake's on the way home. Can I, please, sir?
Sure, if and Mr. Tweedy can spare the mule team and your folks say so. But it can't be no long camping trip.
Sir?
Your daddy's going to be leaving for New York City in 2 or 3 weeks. I don't recollect the exact date, but I don't want your mama staying by herself whilst he's gone. I sure wish she'd change her mind and go on with him. Miss Mattie Lou would want her to. It'd do her good, and it's just a dang shame to waste a free boat ticket.
I was so excited I hardly noticed when Miss Love left the room.
We'll just camp a few days, I told Grandpa.
Them mountains is the best place in the world to be in the hot summertime, he said. I just hope your mother and them see fit to let you go.
Yes, sir, I do too.
But I wasn't worried. With Grandpa practically ordering me to go, there wasn't any real question about it.
Miss Love, he called, I'm a-going on back to the store now. Will Tweedy, you come on with me. I got a sack of groceries I need delivered.
I'd have liked to stay and talk with Miss Love. I wanted her to know I wouldn't tell on her. Miss Effie Bell would, of course, but I wouldn't.
We were halfway to town when Grandpa said sternly, as if I was leaving for Cornelia in a few minutes, Now you be careful with that horse, Will Tweedy.
I will, sir.
Tie him up good to the back of the wagon and don't let them fool boys try to ride it or get to cutting up with him or anything. Or you either.
Oh, no, sir.
Likely he's skittish and high-strung. Most race horses are. If I know Cuttin' Jake, that free horse may have more wrong with it than having to eat. Howsomever, Miss Love needs something to take her mind off of Mr. Texas. Hope she can ride as good as she says she can.
I think Miss Love can do just about anything, Grandpa.
I was thinking if she can marry you like she did and turn you into a judge with just a shave and a haircut and tell off a man like Mr. McAllister, then I reckon she can train a horse.
Grandpa didn't mention the Texan again that day. In his mind, Mr. McAllister was as dead as he'd ever be.
Well, he wasn't dead to me. Even walking along beside Grandpa, I kept remembering the kissing. I figured Miss Effie Bell couldn't have helped seeing. But hey, with her coming out of the bright sunshine, maybe she couldn't see down the hall. I'd like to have comforted Miss Love with that possibility. It wasn't going to be easy for her to cook a nice supper for Grandpa when her reputation depended on the eyesight of a mean old lady with a lip wart and the loyalty of a 14-year-old boy who had never been known to keep his mouth shut. Also, she must still be either hating Mr. McAllister like poison, or else loving his eyes out and having second thoughts about not getting annulled. I wanted to tell her that I, for one, hoped she'd stay in the family.
Chapter 24.
I really juned around when I got home that evening. I needed to lay in a store of good feelings as well as stove wood before asking permission to go camping. At supper, I was trying to think how to bring up the subject when Papa did it for me.
"Mary Willis, your daddy wants Will to go to Cornelia next week," he began. "Cuttin' Jake has offered him a horse if he'll send for it. And Mr. Blakesley said maybe Will and the boys should go camping for a few days first."
Mama looked dumbfounded.
"I know it's mighty soon after your ma's passing, hon, but I think myself the trip would do the boy good. Get his mind off that train trestle."
Looking tired and kind of forlorn, she said, "Well, if you think folks will understand."
"Boy, howdy. Mama, I said a trip would do you good, too. Why don't you go on to New York with Papa?"
She ignored me.
"Hoyt, why does Pa want a horse? He's got Big Jack. What does he need a horse for?"
Then sarcastic, "I guess it's Love that wants the horse. Riding in a buggy behind a mule ain't good enough for her."
"Will, were you down there today when that man from Texas brought her a silver saddle?"
"Yes'm," I reached for a biscuit.
"But it ain't exactly a silver saddle, Mama."
"I heard it was a silver saddle. It's all over town about that saddle."
"Yes'm, but it's only trimmed with silver."
Her blue eyes flashed, and Mama plonked down her fork and looked across the table at Papa.
"Don't she care at all if folks talk? Hadn't she done enough already without accepting an expensive gift like that from a man with a reputation so bad it rides ahead of him?"
"Mr. McAllister didn't give her the saddle, Mama," I said airily. "It was already hers. He just brung it to her. She didn't even want it and told him so."
"I wish you'd quit taking up for that woman," said Mama.
"Now, hon, Will's not—"
"It was Grandpa thought she ought to keep the saddle," said I. "Grandpa liked Mr. McAllister, Mama. Even asked him to stay to supper and spend the night, too."
"Oh, pshaw." Not knowing what, if anything, Grandpa had told when he got back to the store, I was getting uneasy about shading the situation. It occurred to me to change the subject.
"Papa, I bet y'all didn't recognize Grandpa when he came in without his beard and all."
Papa grinned and took another helping of potato salad.
"Mary Willis, you ain't seen him yet, have you, hon?"
"No, but I heard."
She spoke bitter.
"I took him for a stranger. Camp did, too. Camp just kept sitting there on the counter swinging his legs, and Mr. Blakesley finally yelled, 'Get down from there, boy, and find something to do.' I knew then it was him, but I couldn't hardly believe it. Mary Willis, you got you a young daddy. Miss Love shaved 10 years off of him, getting rid of that long, whitey beard and that mane of bushy hair."
"Is that so?"
My mother didn't smile.
"Well, Pa looked just fine to me the way he was. Seems like if Love Simpson can't get him talked about one way, she does it another. Everybody will say she didn't want people thinking he's old enough to be her daddy, but he is."
We ate a while in silence. Then my mother said real sarcastic,
"Hoyt, y'all might as well put up a sign down at the store. Announce the widower is giving his new bride a racehorse for a wedding present."
"Now, hon, you know it's not like that." Papa reached over and patted her hand, but she didn't notice.
"Oh, Hoyt, however will it all end?"
She pressed her napkin to her quivering mouth.
"Ma would spin in her grave."
I had never in my life heard my mother speak out so bitter about anything or anybody. She was the one always took up for the preacher when folks complained about a dull sermon, and she always talked kind about old Mr. Tate if somebody laughed about him lacking sugar in his buttermilk. Remembering how Mama had laid on her bed crying just 2 days ago, so scared Miss Love would get willed the store, I wondered if she could stand it when she found out Pa's house was already deeded over. Or if, Lord help us, she heard about Miss Love kissing Mr. McAllister. I wanted to tell her the store was to be hers and Loma's. Instead, I found myself saying in a small voice, "If it'll make you feel better, Mama, I'll give up the camping trip." "No, go on," she said. "Go on, get it over with. You've been whining around about it ever since Ma passed." She started crying. "But, son, try not to have too good a time." "I'll wear my black armband all the way, Mama," I said, eager to comfort her, but she left the table and ran upstairs. "Papa," I asked, "what's the matter with Mama? It ain't like her to be so hard on folks." "I think she's mad at your granny, son," he said, folding his napkin. He looked like he had a stomachache.
"Mad at Granny?"
"For dying, Will. Mama never made a decision in her life without thinking would her mother approve of it or not. Ever since she passed, it's been like Mama's lost hold of the reins, like she's been pulled along by a team she can't control. And she don't see any sense at all in your granddaddy marrying like he did. She don't know Miss Love, Will, not like I do from working with her. She's a nice lady, and Mr. Blakesley needs looking after. But Mama can't see that yet." I was so excited about the camping trip that I didn't worry as much about Miss Love as she deserved. But I did run up there for a few minutes that night after I was sure it was too late for Miss Effie Bell to come tell on her. Miss Effie Bell didn't have a telephone, so she couldn't call, and she hadn't left home by herself after dark since she was 85 and stumbled on a tree root coming in from Wednesday night prayer meeting. So her not appearing at our house didn't mean yes or no about what she had seen. Just in case, I wanted to make sure Miss Love knew she could count on me. I'd cross my heart and hope to die before I'd tell on her to anybody. I found her in the kitchen, washing up the supper dishes. Her eyes were still red from crying. She looked awful tired, and I didn't quite know how to get out what she needed to hear. "Where's Grandpa at?" I asked. "Out at the barn, feeding the mule. He got in late, so I managed to get up a pretty good supper for him," she said. "Salmon croquettes and slaw and, Forgetting what she was talking about, she just stood there with her hands in the dishwater. I don't know how I let it happen," she said all of a sudden. "You were just so surprised," said I, being helpful.
"Surprised? I guess I was. Will Tweedy, I swear I hardly knew what was happening. It was like being in a dream where you can't move.
Miss Love, you can, count on me." My words stumbled around. I know you couldn't help what happened. He just overpowered you."
She stared at me, saying nothing.
I ain't gonna tell Grandpa or Papa or anybody how Mr. McAllister and you, you know.
I felt like a plumb fool, but Miss Love guessed what I was driving at. Blushing, she patted my arm and thanked me for being her friend. I felt so noble and generous.
"Don't you worry now. If Miss Effie Bell says anything around town, I'll tell everybody it wasn't like that at all. I'll say it was just a brotherly kiss. And besides, I'll say you really told Mr. McAllister off afterwards."
That got Miss Love nervous.
"Don't, Will. Don't say anything at all. This is for grown folks. Anything you say might just make it worse."
I felt like a fool. Where Miss Love had been talking to me like I was a man, now she had cut me back down to size.
"You gonna tell Grandpa?"
I asked in a small voice.
"I don't know. I don't think I can face him if he finds out."
And she burst into tears. She soon got a hold of herself, though, and went back to washing dishes. Holding a plate in midair, she looked at me kindly, smiling that big wide smile, as if this was no bigger problem than getting the stove hot enough to fry the croquettes.
"Don't worry about me, Will. I've been taking care of myself a long time. I just don't want to embarrass your grandfather or the family any more than they're already embarrassed."
She flushed.
"I mean, they're embarrassed enough over us marrying so quickly without... Well, we'll all survive."
She straightened up.
"Yes'm, I reckon."
She saw that I didn't know what to say next. Thank you, Will, for not wanting to be the one who spreads gossip. It shows you've got real character. I do hate gossipers. And with that, she kissed me on the cheek. I practically danced home, thinking about her having confidence in me and about that little peck. By the time I got to bed that night, I was making like it was a kiss full on the mouth. From there, I got to imagining what it would be like to kiss her the way Mr. McAllister did it, with kisses that ran together like a string of pearls. That sure beat thinking about getting run over by a train, but I went too far with it. In the dark, alone in my bed, I tried sucking a knuckle of my finger and pretending it was her mouth. When I got so hot and squirmy I couldn't stand it, I tiptoed downstairs to pour me some sweet milk. With the glass still half full in my hand, I set my mind on Lightfoot McClendon, wondering if she would let me kiss her like that, the way Mr. Texas did it. But in no time at all I had my arms around Miss Love again. It seemed so evil I felt sick. If it's true what the Bible says, that lusting in your heart after another man's wife is the same as if you actually did what you're thinking about, then I was guiltier than Mr. McAllister. When he was kissing Miss Love, he didn't know she was married. But I for sure knew, and it was my own grandfather's wife I was hankering after, which seemed like an awful sin. I was soon trembling with remorse as well as lust. I purely made myself get out paper and a pencil and put my mind on the camping trip. Well, we'd take our shotguns, of course, to shoot game with, and fishing tackle, and a wood axe, baseball and bat and gloves, matches, flour, of course, sugar and salt, a big iron skillet, some lard. There isn't anything like planning a camping trip to get your mind off of what it shouldn't be on. Miss Effie Bell appeared next morning, just as we were fixing to walk out the door to go to Sunday school.
"I would have come last night, but Bubba was feeling poorly," she began all excited. "Well, I hate to be the bearer of evil, but I know y'all had a heap rather hear it from me than somebody else."
And then with her pink lip wart quivering and her skin and bones face lit up like a Christmas tree, she proceeded to tell what the tall stranger had done besides bring Miss Love a saddle.
"And her just 2 days past vowing to cleave only unto Rucker. I swan unto God, these modern women are something else."
Her voice was shaking so bad that she had to stop a minute to breathe. Then she said,
"Well, Mary Willis, I reckon now your daddy will ship her back to Baltimore. Poor man, look what being lonesome got him into."
After Miss Effie Bell hurried off to Sunday school, Mama and Papa lit into me. Did I see the kissing? Well, why hadn't I come straight home and told them? Did Grandpa know? Did Miss Love know Miss Effie Bell saw it? Sounding just like Aunt Loma, Mama said,
"Her conduct proves it, Hoyt. That woman ain't fit to be a servant in Pa's house, much less married to him."
Naturally, Mama stayed home, said she had a headache. Probably she did. But mostly she was too mortified to face the congregation. Papa would have stayed with her, except he had to take up collection. It was just an awful day. Miss Effabel's words flew from mouth to mouth in every churchyard in Cold Sassy. Then after folks talked about Miss Love cleaving to somebody besides Grandpa, they had to speculate about her church affiliation. Her having married a Baptist, Cold Sassy naturally expected her to show up there that morning. The Baptists considered themselves above the rest of us. Most of them, including Aunt Loma, thought Miss Love would join their congregation with Grandpa for the same reason she married him, to come up in the world. It must have been a relief to the Baptists when she didn't appear, because nobody knew whether to treat her like a grave robber or just a repentant sinner. Since the Presbyterians weren't involved, there was no suspense at our preaching service. Just pity for the shamed family. The ones in a pickle were the Methodists. Most had thought Miss Love would go over to the Baptists right away, or else hide at home, one. Well, she not only appeared at the Methodist Episcopal Church South, but she wore a black dress like she was in mourning for the one whose death had been her good fortune, and, as usual, sat down at the piano as soon as she came in. Miss Effie Bell stopped by after preaching to tell us about it.
"That woman ain't got no respect for nobody. Wearing mourning, for heaven's sake, and—"
Just the thought of it made Mama mad, but she tried to be fair.
"It'd look a heap worse if she'd worn red," she said. "Hmm. Anyhow, we fixed her. Nobody sang. Well, Craddock and Agnes did. You know how they are. Them two were singing by themselves, though, I can tell you.
Like we'd agreed to it ahead of time, the rest of us kept our mouths shut.
Aunt Loma came up our walk with Uncle Camp and the baby in time to hear that.
Did Love get the message? She asked, hateful.
By the second verse, her face was red as the songbook, Miss Ephibel said proudly. Still, the nerve of that woman ain't got no limits. She played all 8 verses right down to the amen, but the preacher made certain sure she didn't get to do it again.
He asked her to leave? Asked Loma.
No, he just didn't announce no more songs. Miss Love was still sitting at the piano waiting for the next page number when he started his sermon. It finally dawned on her he wasn't going to let her play again, and she jumped up and flounced out. Well, I better get on home and see about Bubba.
Like an afterthought, she added,
Rucker didn't come to church with her, you know. I reckon he was shamed, too. When I left this morning, I seen him sitting on that big rock in Miss Madeleine's rose garden, repenting of his hasty pudding, I don't doubt.
Chapter 25 I met Pink early Monday morning in front of Clark's drugstore to wait for Mr. Elias Foster, the rural mailman, who would be coming from Commerce in his buggy. He's a talker, I warned. If he can't think of anything else, he'll say, Get your foot away from that egg basket before you bust them eggs. We both laughed.
What's he taking eggs to country people for?
He ain't. They give him eggs for stamps. He puts stamps on their letters and then trades out the eggs at Grandpa's store or at Williford Burns and Rice in Commerce. Mr. Elias made 3 buggy trips a week, delivering letters, newspapers, and Sears Roebuck packages in Banks County. Out one day and back the next. The rural post offices were mostly in farmhouses, my Grandpa Tweedy's place being one of them. We waited for Mr. Elias at the drugstore because Cold Sassy's post office was in there, a big pigeonhole desk over where the telephone central switchboard used to be. They had moved the switchboard to Miss Lucille's house so that she could operate at nights as well as days. When Mr. Elias arrived, we followed him inside. 5 or 6 old men were already sitting around in there, talking crops and fussing about the government in Washington while they cut one another's hair. A colored man named Henry had started a white barber shop in Cold Sassy a few years back, but these old fellas liked the drugstore better. Folks coming in for their mail would stop and talk a while.
"Hey, Will, where y'all going?" Mr. Tom Rainwater asked me.
"Out to Banks County, Mr. Tom. My Grandpa Tweedy's got a big blue North Carolina wagon, and we going to borrow it and go camping." The ride started off as a high old time, us laughing loud and cutting up behind Mr. Elias as the buggy racked out of Cold Sassy. Old T.R. trotted ahead or dropped behind or went dashing off across worn-out fields grown up in broom sedge. Pink and I talked about camping plans till the clip-clopping of the horses made him sleepy. Mr. Elias, contrary to his usual nature, said next to nothing, so I was left to myself. I sat staring at his lean old hulk in the front seat and at the hind ends of the dappled gray horses. I hardly noticed when one of the horses raised his tail and plopped in rhythm with the clip-clop. I didn't see the red dust that coated sassafras bushes and wild flowers by the roadside. I hardly noticed the blackberries that glistened among the brambles. All I saw was Blueford Jackson in his grave. The camping trip had been Blue's idea. We were talking about it that morning. We climbed up the water tower to throw down lighted firecrackers and scare people, the day Blue got the firecracker burn that gave him lockjaw. Though I liked Pink just fine, I couldn't help thinking that if Blue hadn't have died, it would have been him going out to Banks County with me this hot July morning. I wondered, had he rotted down to bones yet? How long did it take? What about Granny? Despite the fine hardwood casket, might she have worms in her already? Lord help me. I tried to think about Lightfoot McClendon's hair shining white in the sun, but that just set me to worrying about whether she went to Blind Tilly Trestle on Saturday, expecting me to be there like I said I would. Dern, why hadn't I tried some way to get word to her? Right about then, Mr. Elias looked over his shoulder at me and asked how did my folks take it when they found out Mr. Blakesley done got married. They took it all right. I knew whatever I said would be written down in his mind to deliver with the mail.
The milliner's a handsome lady, you can say that for.
Yes, sir. How's Miss Aura, Mr. Elias?
Tolerable, just tolerable. She ain't never really got over her pleurisy.
He flopped the reins.
I've been thinking lately on Sal, my first wife, how she ruined my life.
Ruined your life, sir? I grabbed his words like they were a rope to hang on to. Mr. Elias clucked his cheek sideways and flipped the reins till the horses picked up their trot. Then he waved at two old country ladies sitting on their front steps picking through a little girl's hair for cooties. They waved back and stared after us. I thought Mr. Elias would go on telling about his wife then, but his tongue had already burned out. He just sat there, flopping the reins every now and again, or slapping at a fly, or fanning his leathery face with his straw hat. We passed a chain gang of Negro convicts grading the road. They had to step into the ditch to let us pass. Then he spoke. I knowed it were a mistake, soon as me and Sal got married. She warn't like any woman I ever seen before. A purty thing, but when it come to washing or cooking, if she'd have moved any slower, she'd have been going backwards. Everything happened to her was contrary to nature. If she'd have drowned, I'd have gone upstream to look for her. And she said such dang fool things. When she was in the family way, her ma got worried about Sal losing weight. You know what Sal said? She said, Ma, I can't see I've lost any, because they ain't looked under my feet yet, aw. She thought that was cute talk. I told her she sounded like a idiot. For God's dang sake, Sal, shut up, before some judge commits you to Milledgeville. Another silence. Clip-clop, clip-clop, slap-flop, fan. Reins jiggling, horses snorting and pooting, buggy rocking and creaking, steel wheel rims hitting rocks, a caw-caw from a crow somewhere. T.R. way off in the woods, barking at something. Another mile, and Mr. Lyas's gravelly old voice said, I was pitching hay one morning, Sal up there on the wagon seat a-holding the reins, when here come Mr. James Henry's bull. A meanin' charged me and got me down right by the wagon. My wife, she had two good wood axes up there beside her, but she didn't do one dang thing to help me. He spat. After we passed the Antioch Baptist Church, I couldn't stand watching him think any longer. I poked him on the shoulder. How'd you get away from the bull, Mr. Elias? Huh? Why, I gouged his eyes out, he said, matter of fact. Reached up and grabbed a horn with one hand and gouged with the other. Then I quick rolled under the wagon out in his way. I would have killed that bull if I could have. Dang Fang ran off a bellerin' and a bleedin' and a bumpin' into haystacks and fences. That very next week I found out my wife been running round on me for 5 years with a sorry, low-down, good-for-nothing cropper on Mr. James Henry's place. I don't doubt a minute but he led that bull out and sicked him on me. Silence. The horses picked their way around a hole in the road. Mr. Elias spat again. One night I got my gun and followed Sal straight to his house, busted the door down and caught 'em together, and had the dang hammer pulled back to shoot 'em both when it dawned on me they weren't worth killing, neither one of 'em. Eased the hammer back and lowered my gun and plain walked off. I went to live in Cold Sassy with my brother's family and got the mail route. What about Miss Sal? Died. Got bit by a cotton mouth at a church picnic. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Good riddance, saith I. And the next year I married a spinster lady over in Commerce with a nice house, Miss Aura. She's 3 inches taller than me and 6 years older, but she tells me a dozen times a day how much she loves me. By then I was barely listening. From the minute Mr. Elias mentioned Miss Sal carrying on with another man, I went to thinking about Miss Love carrying on with Mr. McAllister. If Grandpa hadn't heard about the kissing yet, he was the only one in Cold Sassy still left to tell. Gosh, what if he found out before we left for the mountains? If he decided to send Miss Love back to Baltimore, he sure as heck wouldn't want me to go on to Cornelia for any racehorse. The buggy rolled between gullied slopes of red clay. Then we passed the grist mill built by my great-grandfather Tweedy around 1850 on the Hudson River and rattled through the cool of the covered bridge he built across the river to join his land together. I wondered how a man smart enough to do all that could have had a son lazy as my grandpa Tweedy, who couldn't even get around to treating his cows for hollow horn or when they got maggots under the skin. One time I asked Papa, didn't he think his daddy was lazy, leaving all the work to field hands or sorry no-count tenants and croppers? Papa said, Your granddaddy's just fresh out of hope, son, like most farmers in Georgia these days. I wish I could have known Grandpa Tweedy's daddy, but he died of the typhoid in 1867. He was too old to go fight in the War of the 60s, but they made him a general in the local militia. General Tweedy, he was called. By the time I came along, most everybody in Banks County thought General Tweedy had been a high monkety monk in the Army of the Confederacy instead of just in the Home Guard. and I never heard any Tweety, not even my own daddy, try to correct the impression. Mr. Elias turned his team off the highway into the rutty lane that led up to the old home place. It, too, was built by General Tweety, out of hand-hewed logs and hand-sawed and hand-planed boards, and had portholes in the upper story for shooting Indians. I poked Pink awake. "Someday I'm going to farm this land," I bragged, gesturing in every direction. "Papa's going to buy it and let me farm it." Mr. Elias spoke up. "Everybody always figured you'd go in the store with Mr. Blakesley, Will." "Well, I ain't. I like farming. All there is to store work is watching out for rice weevils and rotten potatoes,